Man, that's a powerful question. So what am I if I'm not a good tennis player? If I'm one of the biggest players of the world right now. I mean, we're going to dig into that a little bit this weekend. Really excited you're here and figure out how do we operate at optimum potential. So hey, it's good to have you here this weekend. It's good to be back with you guys. My name's Kurt, if we have not had a chance to meet, and this weekend we're wrapping up this incredible series, Spark, Igniting the 167. And we've been on this amazing journey over the last number of weeks where we've been looking at, you know, you spend like an hour with us every week, right? Or if you're tuning in online, you spend an hour online with us. And what do we do with the other 167 hours? God kind of designed rhythms for how we experience optimal living. And so if you're here for the first time, we certainly hope it's not your last time. We're glad you're here. For those of you tuning in online, it's so good to have you join us from wherever you may be tuning in from. And let me just say, if you're here like for the first time or the first time in a long time, or maybe, you know, church just like really hasn't been your thing. You're not like into the religious scene. You don't even know why you're here. Maybe somebody invited you, sent you a link online, and they're like, hey, you ought to join us for this. I just want you to know we're so glad you're here. Crosspoint's kind of designed for you. It's designed. We're simply here to help people find their way to God. And we've been a group of people who have just discovered that when we follow God's way of living, like life is just better, and we're so much better at life, and we are here now then to just help you discover the same. So we want to help you experience the same thing we've experienced. That's the end game, because we believe it helps all of us experience the full potential of what God created for us. So we're glad you're here. We've been looking at these rhythms over the last 5 weeks, everything from play, this idea of having fun, that God created you for pleasure, to work, you know, this idea of steering things, creating, shaping, taking the world and creating new things, hitting the same nail and the same head over and over. There's a value to that. Last weekend, we looked at creativity, this idea of how God designed you. He's a creator. And so if he's a creator designer, then he would have put that same DNA into you. So you are actually creative. It was amazing. And then today, we're going to look at this whole idea of as we end these rhythms, we have to come back and we have to recharge. In fact, one of my favorite pastor's teachers, a guy by the name of John Ortberg, he once said that sometimes the most spiritual thing you can do is take a nap. All right, now think about that. How many of us are like, man, I'm down with that. I could be in on taking a nap. You didn't even know that God was in on such things, right? The most spiritual thing you can do is take a nap. And some of you are like, right now? Like right now? Because I used to get in trouble for doing that in church, right? Yes, I mean, if that's what you need, if that's like the most beneficial thing, I think that's what God would want for you right now. In fact, kind of a funny story. I sat over in these seats about 3-4 months ago on a Thursday night, and when I got home, I wasn't speaking that week, and I got home, and my wife said to me, hey, how was service tonight? And I said, oh, it was good. She says, well, what did you guys talk about this weekend? And I kind of explained something. She's like, did you listen? And I'm like, yeah. And she's like, were you paying attention the whole time? I said, yeah. And I don't know why it hit me. I said, why are you asking me these questions? And then it hit me. I said, I didn't fall asleep, Dad. And it just had this like flashback moment. I forgot certain moments of the service. And she said, well, actually, one of my colleagues texted me and said, hey, I think your husband's sleeping in the front row. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I think I was. And all I can say to that is if with all the stimulation and all the energy that Crosspoint brings and the engagement that we try to bring into the setting, if that's what you need and you can do that, man, that is probably the most important thing for your life right now. All right? And that's probably the last thing you expected to hear in church, right? That's the kind of church we are. So we're going to take a look at the discipline of rest. And as we do this, here's what this reveals to us. And you know this, I know this, but I'm going to say it anyway. One of the things we know is we all have limits. We all have limits. All right, there comes a point where we begin to redline, where we begin to reach the edge, and we have to recharge. And this is true in so many aspects of our life, but specifically when it comes to our pace, and you may have extraordinary capacity. I mean, I feel like I'm somebody who has pretty big capacity. You may have 3 times the capacity that I have, or the people in your family have. But everybody has limits. In fact, just this week, we got a front row seat to observe this on the world stage, right? I mean, I'd be remiss if we didn't kind of just acknowledge for a moment the whole Simone Biles narrative that's going on right now. And I'm going to be honest with you, man, I was disgusted with the response of the American public initially. I mean, the response of, oh my gosh, she's going to cost us a medal. We're not going to, you know, perform the way that we want. I love Michael Phelps. If you've been watching the Olympics, Michael Phelps just called the American public on the carpet the other night. He said, listen, she is a human being. She's not a machine. It's amazing how everybody began to change their tune. They're like, oh yeah, we're behind her now. And we give her credit. It's just amazing how, you know, when it's put in perspective, we all begin to see that, man, there's some strength that it takes when you can say, you know what, I'm not okay. I'm not performing at my optimum. And I think we can learn something from Simone right here. I think we can learn that it's important for us to be able to identify when I'm not okay. In fact, I just want to give you, run us through a short little self-assessment on anxiety. Because, you know, there's obviously mental health that we observe with what Simone's dealing with, and there's a whole, you know, kind of big narrative going on right there, but we're going to dive into a bit of it. It's not all of it, a part of it this weekend, but anxiety is a significant part of a lack of rest for us. So I want you to just kind of answer these questions in your head. In fact, here's the question. Over the last 2 weeks, have you been bothered by any of these following problems? And I'm going to give you like 7 different items, and here's the scale that I want you to use. So as you look at these things, you can keep a tab, you know, in your mind or, you know, in front of you or on your phone. You might pull your phone out, your calculator, and just tabulate your answer to each of these 7 questions. But if with these 7 items, if you go, nope, that's not made its way into my life at all in the last 2 weeks, give yourself a 0. If you said, you know, several days I have experienced that, give yourself a 1. If you say, you know, 50% of the time or more I've experienced that, give yourself a 2. And if you're like, yeah, most days of the last 2 weeks I've experienced that, give yourself a 3. All right, you guys ready? Here we go. Here's the first one. Over the last 2 weeks, have you found yourself feeling nervous, anxious, or on edge? What number would you give yourself? And by the way, you're not going to report this. This is just for your own self-assessment. How would you answer that? What number would you give yourself? Number 2. How often over the last 2 weeks have you not been able to stop or control worrying? Like you just perseverate on it. How many times? Give yourself a number. Number 3, how often over the last 2 weeks have you found yourself worrying too much about different things? Meaning not just the same thing, but it moves from one item to the next. And be honest. Be honest. Give yourself a number. Number 4, how many times over the last 2 weeks have you found trouble relaxing? Just being able to unwind. How many times over the last 2 weeks have you been so restless that you've found it hard to sit still? I want you to think to yourself, be honest, what's your number there? How many times over the last 2 weeks have you found yourself becoming easily annoyed or irritable with your kids, with your employees, with things going on in our world? How many times over the last 2 weeks have you found yourself feeling afraid as if something awful might happen? This is actually a certified assessment for identifying our anxiety. And if you kind of tabulated as you went, I want you to think about the number that you came up with, because here's kind of the scale. So if you came up with 0 to 4 points, then you probably are dealing with mild anxiety. If you came up with 5 to 9 points over all those 7 questions, you probably have a moderate anxiety. If 10 to 14, then you have moderately severe anxiety. And this is the point where you probably need to talk to somebody about this. You're probably not going to be able to solve this yourself. And if you're 15 or higher, I mean, you're probably in the midst of severe anxiety. This is the GAD-7 test for anxiety. You know what Simone Biles exhibited this week was the ability to say, you know what, I'm not okay. I mean, I'm dealing with some immense anxiety, stress, things that are affecting my life. And let's be honest, she's had a year like none other, right? I mean, if we just think of her life for a moment and or what we assume her life is like, I mean, her work, her training, her coaching was certainly different than probably any other year or two in her life. Her training routines, new stresses that she's experienced, those are things you and I experience as well in our day in, day out jobs. You know, for an Olympic athlete, I mean, you know, she had an extended training season. I mean, they prepared for Olympics last summer, and so they had to maintain that high level of performance through an entire year to get to the Olympics this year. All right, these athletes are not made to do that. And then, of course, we have all these points and flashpoints in our culture and in our country where we're not united, where there's polarizing culture around us, everything from politics to, let's be honest, race. And I'm going to be honest, my black and brown friends, I mean, they carry a much higher level of anxiety, specifically on the race issues, than I do. And I have a pretty high level of concern for that. I mean, faith circles have become very polarizing. I mean, now we got vaccinations that are polarizing. I mean, it's just been a polarizing year. In fact, Dr. Tim Elmore, who is one of my favorite bloggers. He released a blog earlier this week at growingleaders.com/. I always look for an opportunity to show you that blog. And it was really interesting. He introduced a new term that I'd never heard before. It's called compassion fatigue. Now, compassion fatigue is secondhand trauma that comes from caring for those who aren't caring for themselves. And what this means, this is fatigue that begins to set in for people who are caring for other people, who are overseeing or responsible for other people. This is teachers, principals, community leaders, business leaders, pastors, anyone who is caring, parents who are caring for other individuals. And it's really interesting because his article was on the educational system, and his students and teachers and administrators come back into the classrooms. There was a quote from Shayla Ewing, and she's a department chair at a high school in Illinois, and here's what she said. She said, "The cost of compassion fatigue looks different for everyone, including experiencing extreme exhaustion, sleep disorders, increased anxiety, and self-isolation in some in the more serious areas." And what's interesting about this is, you know, when I went through that anxiety chart, and if you didn't get a chance to do it while we were sitting here, it's in the app. You can go to This Weekend in the app. Maybe you can screenshot. If you're tuned in online, you can kind of scroll back and you can screenshot those questions. I really encourage you to fill this assessment out. When I went through that, I found I was in an 11. I mean, I'm at a pretty moderate to severe anxiety, and I've been feeling that. And one of the books that's been helpful to me over the last few weeks is a book called Managing Leadership Anxiety. And here's one of the major connects that I walked away with from this. The author says one of the most common catalysts of anxiety is exhaustion. Rest opens you up again to see clearly. And so today, I want us to look at the rhythm of rest. Because I have a feeling this has touched and impacted every single one of our lives in one way, shape, or form. So we're going to look at the rhythm this weekend of recharging. Now, here's what's fascinating about this. Whether you're a Christian, a person of faith, or you're not a person of faith, I think this is a great weekend to be here because this applies to all of us. And so, you know, the Old Testament, as we're going to look at, is kind of this historical account of how God interacted with his people throughout history. I mean, sometimes you read it, it's all these laws, and you don't know all what's going on through the whole thing. Think of it as a narrative of how God interacts throughout history with his people as he's forming a relationship with them. And so his chosen people is this group known as the Israelites. And so he interacts with them on this rhythm of recharge in a very unique way. But you're not going to find the word recharge. You're not going to find the word rest. You're not going to really find the word vacation in here or pace of life. But a long, long time ago in a land far, far away, the nation of Israel was in slavery to Egypt. And so they were a slave state. That's all they knew. And you and I can't fully understand this. All right, but this nation was under slavery in Egypt, and God sent this leader, Moses, to deliver them from the Egyptians out into a free land. And so everyone, hundreds of thousands of people that followed Moses out of this slave state into this promised free land, all they knew was slavery. And so God is, in a sense, establishing a brand new society. And so this was a group of people that all they knew was 24/7 work. All we did was work, 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 work. And you do what you're told, and if you don't, you die. And you don't call in sick because, I mean, you know, there's no room for you being sick. You'll just get discarded, and they're not going to waste medicine on a slave. So God leads this nation out of slavery in Egypt, and he takes them to a new land, and he gives them some new rules to live by. Because, see, the only rules they knew were slave rules. And so you probably have heard of the Ten Commandments, or at least seen the movie Ten Commandments, Charlton Heston, a.k.a. Moses. And so, you know, you probably know the Old Testament also has way more rules than just 10, the top 10. I mean, there's like 600 and some rules in the Old Testament. And the reason there's so many rules is, think about this, it's absolutely amazing. It's because God is establishing a new country, a brand new way of living, a brand new way of thinking, a brand new value system. He's totally kind of cleansing and renewing their minds. And so in the midst of this, God gives them these laws. He builds in these laws this very distinct rhythm for how we work and how we play and how we recharge if we want to live an optimal life. And one of the big ones, you've heard of it before, it's something called the Sabbath. Something called the Sabbath. In fact, here's what it says in the Old Testament in Exodus. It says, God says, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Holy simply means set it apart, make it different than all the other days. Now, you and I, we're familiar with the Sabbath, and you're probably going, a Sabbath day? Man, we live in the United States of America. We get Sabbath days, right? We get like Friday and Saturday. I mean, it's not like one day. Like, we get 2 days, right? And so this is like kind of impossible almost for us to fully understand. See, the idea of even taking one day off and doing no work, that was like completely foreign to them. I mean, it was dangerous, in fact. I mean, this was like pre-refrigeration. I mean, think about this. They had to go out and work for their food. So, I mean, they couldn't store their food the day before for the next day. And so if you didn't work, you didn't eat. And so God's saying to this brand new nation who all they know is work, 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 work. It's all they'd ever experienced. He says, hey, one of my top 10 rules, I want you to taketh the day offeth. That's what he says. Now think about this for a moment. Who doesn't love a God who says, I want you to take a break, take a vacation, enjoy a nap, enjoy some things that bring you pleasure, recharge, right? I mean, even if we go back to the creation narrative in Genesis, right at the beginning of Genesis, this poem that explains how the world came to be. Understand, this is being written for this Hebrew people in that time period for them to understand God's intention. First 3 days, God separates. He separates the light from the darkness, the sky from the land from the waters. And then the next 3 days, he populates. He begins to bring in foliage and trees and flowers on day four. Day five are the beasts of the fields and the fish of the sea. And then on day six, he creates you and me. He creates human beings. And he says, it's very good. And he says, I put you here to steer this thing somewhere, to work the land, to take it and produce and develop things. But he says, before we do anything else, you know what the very first thing he asks you to do is? Day seven. It says, first, we're just going to take a day off. Before we do anything, we're going to take a day off. I mean, think about that. That was God's rhythm. And see, the bigger thing that he's saying to them is I want you to be reminded or maybe for the first time realize you are a human being. You're not a human doing. And one of the ways you recognize this is when you rest. You need to recharge. The batteries need to be charged back up. You need to get out of the grind. You need to get renewed. Because when you don't, you get in a rut and it leads to bad places and ruts lead to depression. It's kind of like you're not a washing machine, for God's sake. Like, I don't know what the washing machine's like in your home. Ours just goes constantly. There's six of us always trying to get stuff in there. He's like, you have a duty cycle. You can't just go continuously. And then Jesus rolls around and, you know, the Pharisees, you know, put all these little details and laws and rigid requirements on the Sabbath. And you can't like lift a bowl or you can't help an animal out of a hole. And they just, you know, kind of bastardize the whole thing. But in ancient times, God's intention was whenever you came to Friday and the sun went down, you ceased working for an entire 24-hour period of time until Sunday morning when the sun came up, then you could resume work. Otherwise, you got out of your rhythm of work so you could be recharged. And God said, when I make people do this, the entire culture kind of does this corporate, and the anxiety is released. You know why God does this? I mean, for one, it's because he wants you and I to enjoy pleasure, enjoy things that are enjoyable. But there's also another reason. Because see, in the midst of this, I'm going to take my hands off the wheel, we actually have to trust him. But what if I don't get everything done? He says, I want you to trust me. But my fields, what if I don't get all the crops in before the sun hits the horizon? You have to trust me. But what if? Would you just trust me? Would you just trust me? See, taking a Sabbath is potentially one of the deepest expressions of faith. It's one of the most deepest expressions of trust. In fact, Jesus, he said something really fascinating when he kind of weighed in on this. He actually said this. He said, the Sabbath was actually made for man. See, the Pharisees made it all about honoring God. Jesus said, no, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. He said, God created this for people like you, people like me. Listen, you miss the mark when we don't take a Sabbath. It's called sin. It's not like God's up there mad at us. It's not like God's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to punish them for missing the Sabbath. No, all sin, as we've talked about before, is a built-in consequence. We feel it. We experience it. God doesn't have to bring anything to us because we kind of create the consequence for ourselves. We miss it. And he says, to experience it, you got to trust me. Because the principle is we have limits. You have limits. I have limits. And I want there to be a regular rhythm where you take moments to recharge. And in that space, when you go, God will take care of you. Now, I want to give you a few pictures of what this looks like. And what this looks like for me, and I'm going to be honest, I'm going to share some pictures of how I've struggled with this. And so, you know, what God's initially talking about here is what we can call a weekly Sabbath. And this happens, this means one out of every 7 days, I want you to get out of your normal routine. I want you to stop producing the normal things you produce. I don't want you to work or be productive in the ways that you're normal productive. And I want you to exhale and do a different pattern. Now, for me, my work week is Sunday through Thursday. When we started the early weekend service on Thursday nights, our weekend goes from Sunday and we produce everything toward Thursdays and then it's ready for Sunday and then we start all over and do it again. So our team gets Friday, Saturday for the most part, give or take, off. And on those days, I don't check email. On those days when I'm disconnecting, I don't respond to phone calls or have intentional conversations unless there's a crisis. I'm not reading for message content. I'm reading for personal enjoyment. It's a weekly Sabbath. It's getting out of the routine. I'm going to be honest with you. Over the pandemic, I have not done well at taking this. And part of it's because of the demands of the season. I mean, I can look back at nearly every weekend where we were dealing with volunteer holes and COVID impact, taking whole teams out. Or there are weekends where we didn't even know if we'd have enough personnel to pull off services. And, you know, we trusted God and every single weekend happened. But it took a lot of week in those Fridays and Saturdays. And I'm going to be honest, I missed the mark a bit here. In fact, one of the things I've discovered over the last few weeks is I've missed this. And there's a price that I've paid. And I call it sin. It's sin. When you miss the mark, it's called sin. And again, it's not like God's upset with me. I almost see him going, oh my gosh, Kurt, I can't believe you're not following what I'm asking you. You're going to pay a price. You're creating your own consequence. Now, monthly. There's a monthly rhythm that I find helpful to put into Sabbath as well. And what I do is I try to take a Sabbath from one of the most intense parts of my job, which is what I'm doing right now. And so one of my goals is every 4 to 5 weeks, I try to take a time out of the teaching role so I can just have a normal week because I still have a whole organization to run, all right? But speaking and teaching, it wears me slap out, I'm going to be honest. It is not something that energizes me. It wears me out. I enjoy it, but it makes me tired. And listen, part of it's because I wasn't a great student, I'm going to be honest. Like in school, in the traditional learning form, I wasn't a great student. I love to learn. I love to explore, discover, figure things out. But, you know, the process of listening and to podcasts and studying and reading and crafting something, it's a grueling process for me. In fact, one of my board members who used to speak here regularly, Scott McDonald, when we were across the street at the school, he's moved to Phoenix over the last number of years, and so he's not around. But he operates in corporate America. And he said to me one day, he said, you know, Kurt, I've spoke in the context you speak in. And I also give business presentations where I have to recap earnings. And he says, you know, it's not that that's easy, but it's not emotionally draining like standing in front of a group of people where every week, every 5 days, you have to have a brand new product. Totally new composition. Something fresh to say. And I'm going to be honest, it gets oppressive at times. And I feel the weight of that. And so I try to take a season out. And I've got a great team. Did you guys not enjoy Mark and Chris over the last 5 weeks? Man, I tell you what. It's an opportunity to develop our team. But see, there's a rhythm for refreshment that happens. And I might ask you, you know, the same question. What does that look like for your life? And I'd also say it's good for everybody, right? Like you get to hear different voices. You get to be offended and your toes stepped on by somebody else every now and then, right? I mean, that's a good thing. And so those are good rhythms for us to get into. Now, quarterly. Here's how I think about this quarterly. One of the things Julie and I try to do is every quarter we try to take a weekend away or a vacation. And so, you know, we take a week in the spring, we take a week in the fall, and then we typically take 2 weeks in the summer. Now, if you've been around Crosspoint for any time at all, one of the things we do as a community here at Crosspoint is the last weekend of the year, we actually take a Sabbath for everyone. After we run through the intense, you know, stretch of Christmas Eve services, I think we had something like 12 or 13 last year, we take the entire weekend off, the last weekend of the year, give all our leaders, all our volunteers a Sabbath day of rest so we can come back in the new year and restart. And then I want to share something with you that I think is maybe one of the things I appreciate most about Crosspoint and our leadership here. And it's perhaps the single most important factor that's allowed me to stay in my role since we founded Crosspoint 15 years ago. See, our governance board, who does governance with Crosspoint, has this high value of fresh leaders and fresh workers. And they understand that the people in my role generally stay in their job between 2 and 3 years, then they move on to a new place. Or if you're lucky, you might be there 5 or 6 years. And they want to prevent that. And I want to prevent that. And so our overseeing board, one of the things they did about 8 years ago is they gave, requested, required, I'm not sure what the right word is. They said, we want you to take an extended time off. Now, you may have heard the word sabbatical before. Sabbatical comes from the word Sabbath. The root word is Sabbath. Now, sabbatical is something you see in the educational realm. You see it in higher education where a professor every seventh year might take an entire year to rest, to study, to renew. It's a spiritual concept. I mean, it's something that is practiced in the Old Testament that every 7 years there's a season of rest and renewal. Oftentimes in the church context, that's one quarter every 7 years to rest or renew. Sometimes it's up to a year. And so our governance board said to me 7, 8 years ago, they said, we want you to take an extended time off, at least 3 months. And I looked at them, I said, I don't know that I'm going to want to come back. I don't know if I get out that long that I'm going to want to come back. So we negotiated, and I said, what if you added one additional week? So instead of one quarter, 13 weeks, you gave me 14 weeks in addition to vacation. And instead of taking it in one fell swoop, what if you split that up over 7 years and I took 2 additional weeks every year? And they said, okay, we'll do that, but you've got to pair that with 2 of your existing vacation weeks and take at least 4 consecutive weeks off. So we agreed. And I can tell you, it's been one of the most life-giving, refreshing things that our leadership has ever done. And I'm so thankful for it. And during that season, which I just came off of, by the way, I was gone for about 30 days, I disconnect, I don't respond to emails, calls, ministry items. I mean, I fully let the team run the organization. And I know some of you are going, huh, man, must be nice. It is, actually. It is nice. I mean, it's a great benefit. And usually I come back energized, refreshed, creative juices flowing, man, I'm amped up, ready to go. And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be honest with you, this year was a bit different. Coming back. And part of it's because it's been a different 16 or 18 months going into this. And so I want to share with you a few of my discoveries over the last 4 weeks as I've kind of been off. And you discover certain things when you have downtime, when you unplug, that you can only discover when you fully take your hands off the wheel. And so the first one was this. Man, I knew it had been a heavy stretch. I knew I was tired, but I didn't realize how tired I was. I didn't realize my anxiety level had crept up so high. And so about two weeks into our time off, usually it takes about 1 week for me to decompress and I begin to feel like a normal human being again. 2 weeks in, I hadn't gotten there. In fact, 3 weeks in, I was still waking up at 3, 4, 5 in the morning, sometimes in a panic, in anxiety. What decisions do I need to make? What are the new protocols? What do we need to do? I know when we make this decision, 20% of people are gonna be happy, 80% of people are gonna be pissed. I mean, every time we make a decision, and I'd lived in that. And one of the things I realized is it wasn't just those 2 or 3 weeks, but this is a pattern I've developed for the last 12 or 14 months. And it was exhausting. And as I reflected on this, I began to realize that that wasn't God's best for me. And yeah, I could say the season kind of pushed me into it, but if I'm honest, I mean, I missed the mark. I missed the mark, and I had to repent of that. I mean, repent simply means to turn and change and say, okay, I need to do something different. And it's not like God was upset with me. It's not like God was angry, but I certainly was experiencing. Sin has built-in consequence. So I was experiencing the consequence of that. Another thing I discovered is my confidence, my identity, it slowly began to get tied to my performance, to my production. And so you can't fully see that until you fully unplug. And I'm an entrepreneur, I'm a developer, I'm a shaper, I like to steer things, move things, tinker with things, move them forward. I love progress, I'm driven by progress. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's the entrepreneurial spirit that I think attracts people to CrossPoint. But see, when you disconnect and when you unplug, I'm not standing on a stage anymore. I mean, I'm not looking into a video camera any longer. I'm not hearing stories of how CrossPoint's, you know, encouraging people or changing lives, or God's using what we do here to change trajectories of lives. I mean, I'm just Kurt now, and I'm just Dad. And it allowed me to recenter my identity, not in what I do, not in my performance or how well we're doing, but simply in Jesus. That my identity comes as a son, as a child of God. And I'm going to tell you something, that's a very vulnerable place. Because probably like many of you, it's easy to just gravitate into thinking my behavior and my activity and the things I'm doing and the difference I'm making is what God sees as my value. And I had to come to grips with that. I loved what Simone Biles tweeted out just yesterday, I think. You know, she kind of realized, I began to really feel the affirmation of the American public. She said, "The outpouring of love and support I received has made me realize I'm more than my accomplishments and gymnastics, which I never truly believed before." See, I don't know that you can fully grasp that until you choose to step back and disconnect. And there's a healing that begins to come. And then the third discovery was this. I began to realize that when the batteries get fully drained, and one of my mentors shared this with me a number of years ago, they don't recharge as fast. And I'm going to be honest, usually I come amped up, I'm back, and I'm creative, and juices are flowing, and here's what we're tackling next. And this year, I kind of was at the place where I'm like, I barely got my nose above ground zero, and I finally feel like a human being again. And again, I said, God, I got to make a change. That's what it means to repent. I want to do things different. I want it to look different. And I needed God's grace in that moment. One of my good friends, 2 days ago, we were sitting having lunch, and he said to me, he said, Kerr, it's not been a normal year, so you can't expect normal results. And he looked at me in the eyes, and he said, I'm going to remind you something that you remind us all the time, that this is a space where there's grace for you. And I'm telling you, that was just a powerful thing that began to feed into my spirit. Because again, there's a vulnerability when you come to that place of realizing, man, my production is not my identity. And there's a healing and restoring that begins. Which brings us full circle back to when we take a rest, when we recharge, it's an act of faith. Whether that's laying our head on our pillow at night and saying, okay, God, I'm going to take my hands off the wheel. I'm not going to worry while I go to sleep. I'm going to leave the world in your hands for a moment. I think you can handle it since you created it. Or, you know, God, I'm going to take a day a week off, and all the stuff I didn't get done, I'm going to trust it's going to get done, but I know I need the recharge. Or I'm going to take a monthly rhythm or a quarterly rhythm or a yearly rhythm of extended vacation or time off because it matters. Now, I don't know how this lands for you. I've tried to be as transparent as I can, and I felt like, you know, in light of some of the things we're seeing in our world right now with the awareness of, man, if I'm not doing okay, I need to pay attention. And that's been a part of my journey over the past few weeks. And so I don't know where in the midst of this you said, yeah, that's me right there. Yeah, that's what I need. Or, oh my gosh, I so need this right here in my life. And so I just want to ask you, what's your anxiety level? I mean, if you filled that assessment out in your mind, what number did you come up with? Or if you didn't, I encourage you to do that later this weekend. 8, 9, 10. I mean, if so, you probably need to talk to somebody. In fact, one of my friends who does a lot of work with mental health just said, I said, what's the indicator? And he said, if you've ever said over the last few weeks or months, hey, I probably ought to talk to somebody, then that means you probably should talk to somebody. And so if that's you, if you've ever said that over the last number of weeks or months, I just want to encourage you to mark that on your next steps that you would like to see somebody, and we will send you a counseling referral sheet so you can take that step when you're ready. Now, for others of us, as we think about what do I do? How do I recharge? How do I re-energize? I want to give you some next steps because taking a rest may be the most important thing you can do. And so here's a few next steps. You can follow along on your connection card if you'd like. Perhaps it's just taking a nap today, maybe tomorrow, maybe scheduling it in your day sometime over the next few days. And you might be hanging out and your family goes, what are you doing? You're like, well, the pastor said, and you take a nap. This is like a permission giving moment, all right? If that's what you need, that might be the most spiritual thing you need to do. Perhaps it's developing a weekly rhythm of identifying one day in your week where you can totally jump out of the normal processes that you do in your work life and your family life and say, okay, I'm going to do something different so I can recharge. Or maybe it's planning a vacation. Maybe it's looking at your benefit statement and just saying, okay, how many unused vacation days do I have? I was listening to a podcast just a few weeks ago with the founder of Terminus. Many of you probably know him, Sangram Vadre. And you may not know him by name, but he was the marketing director at Pardot, which eventually bought ExactTarget, which eventually, you know, bought Salesforce, which some of you work for. And so his new kind of startup company, Terminus, in their organization, they give unlimited vacation time. They don't have like set vacation days. You need a vacation, you take the time. And he said, quickly, we began to see that nobody was taking vacation time. We looked at the numbers, and people weren't taking vacation. And I know some of you are going, man, how do I find those people to work for me, right? but he said, no, this is a problem. It's not good. It's not healthy. It's not good culture for our organization. And so he began to make his managers require the employees to take so much vacation every quarter. I tell you, you want to piss people off? Make them do something that's good for them and make them do it, all right? And you're going to make people mad. You're going to get a bee's, a hornet's nest in a moment, right? He said, we're making people take vacation. So maybe that's one of the best things you can do is say, I'm going to schedule. I'm going to sit down this weekend. I'm going to schedule some time to recharge. And see, here's what's cool. If you do any of these, this is what is called repenting. It's saying, oh my gosh, repenting isn't guilt. It's saying, I'm going to turn and begin to move in a new direction. And I'm telling you, there is life on the other end of that. So I want you to consider what that means for you this weekend. And of course, next weekend, we got At the Movies. Hope you're back and you'll invite somebody to join us next weekend. Now, as we close, I want us to experience something that connects us all the way back to the nation of Israel. Because see, there's a really big connect between us today and the rhythms we've been living over the last 14, 16 months and the nation of Israel. The Israelites were slaves. They worked all the time because they felt like I couldn't keep up. People are going to get ahead. There's all these things I've got to take care of. And in Egypt, you were worth what you produced. And God rescues the nation of Egypt out of Egypt, and he teaches them your worth and value come because you are rescued and redeemed children of the one true God. And so as I thought about that, I thought about what's in your bag that you picked up when you walked in today. And for those of you at home, the items, the crackers, the juice, the wine that you've gathered into this moment, I want you to take that out. Because see, over 2,000 years, people who are running after the heart of God have been sharing in this meal called communion. Jesus came along and called it communion. And some call it the Eucharist, which charist means grace. Some call it, the mass, because it's literally taking in the mass of Christ. And so, you know, it basically, all the way back to this Old Testament community, when God rescued them from slavery, he instituted this meal called the Passover. And it was a meal they celebrated every single year to remind them that God has rescued them. Their identity is not in what they can make and what they can produce, but it's because they are children of the one true God. And so Jesus, the night that he was arrested, as he was gathering with his team, he sat down at the table and he just took some common items off the table. And in fact, I want to ask you to go ahead and take out the packet of crackers. Grab your bread at home, your crackers, your tortilla chip, whatever you have available. And here's what Jesus said when he came to a certain point in the meal. It says, while they were eating, he took and offered the bread to them. And they and gave thanks and broke it and gave it to his disciples, saying, take it, this is my body. I mean, they were having a full-blown meal. I mean, sometimes you go to church, you get a little styrofoam wafer that gets stuck in your teeth, and you're like, he took something. These are like crackers from Steak and Shake or, a restaurant. And so I want you to think about this. He said, every time you eat this bread, I want you to remember my body was broken for you. And when you come to the place of being ready to enter into a relationship with Jesus, he takes all of you on, all of your past, all your pain, all the places where you failed, all your rebellion, all your oppression, all your anxiety, all the places where you've missed the mark. He takes all of it. He says, I stretched out my arms to bring healing and restoration to you, to remind you you're not the sum of what you produce. And so if this represents you and this represents Jesus to you, I want you to go ahead and open up your bag. And if it doesn't, then this doesn't really mean anything to you. But maybe that's never meant this to you, but for the first time, you're like, I need that kind of God in my life. I need that kind of grace. A God who takes on all my pain and my anxiety and restores and redeems it. And so if that's where you are, I invite you to take this as your first communion. So he says, take the bread and eat. Let's eat together. And they probably like ate the whole bag, right? Like they're having a meal. I mean, they're not just having one. So if you need the whole bag, like I want you to take in, receive the body of Christ. And then notice these next words. It says, then he took the cup and gave thanks and offered it to them and they drank from it. This is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many. Why don't you go ahead and hold the juice in your hands. Hold your cup at home. He just said, listen, your value is not decided by what you can produce. Your worth is decided by what someone's willing to pay for you. And I gave my life for you. That's how much you're worth to me. And so if you've received the grace of Jesus, or if you want to receive the grace of Jesus for the first time, then receive the juice, the drink, as a representation of his grace for you. Let's drink together. Let's stand. I want to pray for us, and we're going to sing. Heavenly Father, thank you for the reminder that we have limits, for developing rhythms that allow us to be re-energized so we can actually enjoy life, that there's ways that we can find optimum living. I pray that you remind us, wherever this landed with us this week, and you remind us that we are not the sum of what we can produce. But Heavenly Father, we're children of the Most High God. And so I just pray as we sing that you would just cement that on our hearts, I pray.